And good evening, everyone. It's Stephen Trammell here for the week of December 6th. Is it the 6th? 6th. No. December 6th is Sunday.
Oh, is it only the 6th? It seems like we're deeper into December than...
Well, it's the 9th today, but the week of December 6th. Oh. And I'm joined with
10-4.
Todd Reynolds.
Yep.
Todd, we've been just hammering on some tough stuff in our latest podcast titled...
A Life Worthy of His Sacrifice.
And we talked about the very first one, what a high calling it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a serious thing. It's our life's most important goal. And when you start talking about some of these things that would fall under the category of, man, things we ought to be doing in honor of Jesus and the walk worthy of the calling, it's tough. And we got another tough one this week.
Yeah. Yeah. But definitely one that is fundamental, essential. No one's living a life worthy of a sacrifice without doing this.
Yeah, and tonight's topic is about good works.
Yeah, and particularly being zealous for good works. You know, the Bible instructs us about zeal, and that zeal being channeled, for the most part, into good works.
Yeah, yeah. Titus 2, starting in verse 11, "For the grace of God has appeared, bringing salvation to all people, training us to renounce ungodliness and worldly passions and to live self-controlled, upright, and godly lives in this present age, waiting for our blessed hope, the appearing of the glory of our great God and Savior Jesus Christ, who gave himself for us to redeem us from all lawlessness and to purify for himself a people for his own possession who are zealous for good works."
Yeah, and I mean, that's a meaty section there. Would you read 11 through 14?
Yeah.
I mean, we'll probably need to come back to these verses for another podcast on living a life worthy of a sacrifice.
Because
when he says to live a life that is denying ungodliness and worldly lusts, we want to spend a podcast probably focused on that around purity and holiness and obedience. But tonight there toward the end of that reading, verse 14, God wants us to be zealous for good works. And think about some of the words, even after Jesus ascended and the apostles are preaching about Jesus in Acts chapter 10, when Peter's talking about Jesus to Cornelius and the household of Cornelius, what did he say that Jesus did? He went about doing good, right? And then the apostle John talks about Jesus at the end of his letter. And he's like, you know what? If we wrote down all the things that Jesus did, the world couldn't even contain the books that would be written in therein. You know, and then you have verses like 1 Peter 2:21, you know, "For you have been called to this purpose, since Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example to follow in his steps." So Jesus went about doing good. Jesus did enough good deeds that, you know, you could like fill up the world with books and still not get it all recorded. And then we're supposed to follow in his footsteps. We've got some work to do.
Well, and it's funny you mentioned Cornelius. You remember in Acts chapter 10 what it said at the very beginning about Cornelius?
Yeah.
It said he was a devout man who feared God with all his household and gave alms generously to the people and prayed continually to God. And then when he has this vision about getting connected with Peter, God's first thing he says to him is, "Your prayers and alms have come up before a memorial to God."
Like, yeah, yeah.
I've seen what you're doing down there.
Yeah, your good works and your good deeds and your giving and your generosity, it's just come straight up to my throne.
Yeah, and so that's like all we know about the guy is, yeah, he prayed to God, but he lived it out in his life too. Put his money where his mouth was.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, you know, when Peter says that Jesus went about doing good, and then Titus 2:14, our key text tonight, be zealous for good deeds. You know, that's got to be fundamental to living a life worthy of a sacrifice. I mean, it's like we're, and it's a struggle, right? I mean, there's days when we're tired, right? Or we don't feel like it. You know, there had to be those kinds of days for Jesus. And there were certainly days when the apostles were like, "Jesus, tell all these people to go away because we don't want to, you know, have to deal with the 5,000. And Jesus is like, "You give them something to eat. Like, you've got work to do right now. And I know you don't want to do it, but this is not the time to stop."
Well, that's why it's so hard. I mean, I said at the beginning, like, "Oh, this is going to be a difficult podcast."
Yeah.
And it is, because at our hearts, we don't want to do anything.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we live in a society where there are some really comfortable couches and recliners and
the best.
I mean, the remote control is really nice, and
you can just speak into the remote control now. You don't even have to use
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
You just talk to
whoever Alexa is. I haven't met her, but she just does things just talk for you. To it.
We don't want to do anything. We don't have to do anything. Yeah. And the best days in our lives are the days when we don't have anything to do.
Yeah, and I even tell Kelly joking, and not just Kelly, like other people, it's like I jokingly tell them sometimes, I'm going to go home and hold the couch down. I'm concerned it might float away.
And we look forward to that, man. We look forward to that rest. But like we talked about a little bit last week, it's not time for rest.
Yeah, that's right. And that's just the honest truth. It's not always easy. You definitely got to stay motivated. You got to keep your like A game on. We just got a new CFO at the company that I'm working with, and everyone's like, oh, a new CFO. So what was everybody wanting to do? Well, they're wanting to put on their A game. Well, the A game should be present all the time. And, you know, at times we might get a little more motivated in our earthly endeavors because of a certain circumstance. But for us to just kind of remember, hey, you know, Jesus is the Son of God, right? You mentioned in a podcast 2 or 3 weeks ago that God says in Malachi, I am a great king, you know, and so, you know, that's just something for us to keep in the forefront of our minds, to be motivated, you know, more consistently, to be diligent, you know, on a more regular basis, to live this life worthy of a sacrifice.
Yeah. And when we talk about good works, that is something that it's very generic. So we're probably going to need to spend some time talking about what some of those look like.
Right.
He doesn't say in Titus just to do good works. He says to be zealous for them. So there's a little bit of an attitude that we should spend some time talking about.
Right.
But the first thing I want us to discuss as we kind of enter into this topic is when we say being zealous for good works, we're not just talking about being busy and just being busy about things or a hard worker. Because there's a lot of people that are hard workers. There's a lot of people that are busy. There's a lot of people that are industrious. But the things that they're working on aren't necessarily what God intended or wanted you to work on. I'm reminded of Haggai. You remember Haggai chapter 1?
Oh, yeah.
Only a couple chapters. But in chapter 1, God says, consider your ways.
Yeah.
And he was talking about considering their ways because here we're post-exile. And it's like time to get things back on track with the return. And when everybody comes home, what do you think the most important thing to do is when you've returned from a generational hiatus to your homeland?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He's like, is it time for you to dwell in your paneled houses while my house lies desolate? So what they were doing is taking care of their own stuff.
They came home and were like, we're gonna do good works, and here's a work someone do. My house is gonna be pristine.
I'm gonna get my house fixed up.
We're gonna be good, and it's part of rebuilding. No one would look at them and say, "Well, what you should do is you should live under that palm tree over there, or you need to sleep under the stars with a stone for your pillow, like Jacob." Like no one is saying that to them, and so the natural reaction that you have is, "Well, I'm gonna spend time on me."
Yeah, right.
And you go to sleep at night after working hard, and you feel good, and you're exhausted, and you're like, we got a lot done today, honey. And then God looks down at you and is like, what are you doing?
You didn't really do anything.
These people say in verse 2, the time has not yet come to rebuild the house of the Lord.
Yeah.
And so really the priority of people by default is laziness. But then you find industry, but in that industry, generally, it's very self-focused.
Yeah.
What we're talking about tonight are good works, works that God would say he wants us to be about and be doing.
Yeah, things that would fall into the category that Jesus is talking about when he says, lay up for yourselves treasure in heaven, right? Which is very different than laying up treasure here on earth or getting your house fixed here on earth. When you talk to people about their daily life, like almost anyone I ever talk to is like, man, I'm so busy. You know, that's just kind of the common denominator of our society. But I think what you're saying and what we want to address is, yeah, you're busy, but are you busy doing the right things? You know, you get a screen report on a lot of these Apple phones. It's like how much time you spend on your phone for the day. It's like, wait, what?
Don't look at it.
You know, you look at a data plan.
My Bible's on my phone.
Yeah, well, there you go. Dad, I was just reading through Haggai.
Just reading through Haggai and stumbled across this passage.
Yeah.
It. it's not even just a Haggai Old Testament weird thing. Jesus, right in the middle of the Sermon on the Mount, says there's a difference between doing good things and doing things like God would want you to do. He right. talks about your generosity
yeah.
toward others, and he's like, look, if you just love those who love you, what reward do you have? He's like, tax collectors, like yeah. people that you would look at as a sinner do the same. If you do good to your family, everybody does good to their family for the most part. So, yeah. you know, we think about the Christmas season and a season of giving. Guess what? Who we're giving to?
Yeah.
You're giving to your family. You're yeah. drawing names. Like, here's a name. Give to this person.
Yeah.
The world is doing that.
Right.
So sometimes we can fool ourselves into thinking, oh man, this is easy because I'm out. I'm busy, just like you said. I'm spending a lot of time doing things.
Burning the candle at both ends.
But Jesus tries to make that point. You might be busy, but I want you to be busy at a level where the world is not recognized for doing. And to people that the world isn't recognized for doing.
Yeah,
got to be a
right.
difference in our good works and the good works of the world. And let me say it this way. If we're no different than the world post-Christianity,
right.
then have we even been born again? Like, the goodness of the world is going to lead them to hell.
Yeah.
But the goodness of God leads us to repentance and a different life, a people zealous for good works. So there's got to be a marked difference between my goodness and the goodness of my neighbor.
Yeah. You're really not being a light, you know, in Matthew 5:16, when he says, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. You know, if you're just taking care of your family or your friends, your buddies, then there's no light there. I mean, it would have to be someone outside of the sphere of friends and family for them to even be impacted to see a light or see a difference, right? And certainly that's what Jesus did.
So as we think about this topic then, being zealous for good works, we've made the point that the good works we're talking about are works that God would ordain, God would want us to do, that are going to separate us, mark us as Christians. Let's talk a little bit about the attitude now, where he says, I want a people that are zealous for good works. Why does he have to use an attitude? Because if he just said, hey, go do this, you can go do this, it really doesn't matter how I feel about it.
Yeah, right.
Here he talks about an attitude.
Yeah, kind of a level of excitement. And certainly, you know, Philippians 2, 1 Peter 4 talks about showing hospitality without grumbling. Philippians 2 is like, do everything without grumbling and complaining. And there certainly can be a...
Are those in the Bible?
Bad attitude.
Hold on, I need to go get my kids. Let me go get them from upstairs.
No, I mean, I'm not looking at the verse right now, but I think it's 2:14 of Philippians. And if it's not, it's 13 or 15, but it's right in that zip code.
There it is, 1 Corinthians 10. Don't complain as those...
Oh,
who complained in the wilderness.
And were destroyed by the destroyer.
Yeah. I mean, so there's some attitude stuff that God looks for, not just in our actions. And this idea of being zealous is a pretty strong word. We don't use the word too much, like, hey, that's a zealous guy.
Right.
You know, kind of a Bible-type word.
Yeah.
A zealot almost has a religious connotation to it.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, the idea of a zealot was associated with a class of people in Jesus's day.
Yeah. And we know a lot about the Pharisees and the Sadducees, which were the most predominant groups or sects in the Jewish nation. But the Zealots were one of the top four there. And
yeah, it was like a group of people, like a political party almost.
Yeah.
Where they had one goal in mind.
Yeah.
They hated the Roman government.
Right.
They hated anybody that would undermine the sovereignty of the nation of Israel. And they felt like biblically they had a right to self-rule. God had given them this nation.
Yeah.
And we're not going to let this nation be taken from us so easily. And so they were a very political group, very subversive, very militant, very violent.
Yeah.
And common. Even though there weren't a Pharisee, Sadducees, weren't reading about a ton in the Bible, one of Jesus's disciples
was
characterized as a zealot.
Yeah.
And not an adjective to describe his personality. He was associated with that political group.
Right.
And so this was someone that was pro-Israel.
Yeah, and one thing about the zealots, you know, nobody looked at that group of people and be like, well, they just don't care about Israel. Yeah, they just don't give a rip about, you know, our nation. I mean, they would have been like these quote-unquote patriots that it's like, wow. I mean, they've got like the Star of David tattooed on their shoulder. Sorry, I didn't mean to bring the tattoos up again.
Tattoos again.
But that's just kind of, they're so hardcore. It was just focused.
Well, and you think about that as hardcore. Here's the thing. They would kill themselves for their country.
Yeah.
They would
sacrifice.
Barricade, you know, themselves in there. I mean, you can read about the Maccabean Revolt and, you know, how they just were holed up in a place. I mean, they were going to maintain control over Herod's palace. You think about near the destruction of Jerusalem. They were involved in inciting violence and riots against the Roman Empire, which ultimately led to the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70. Like, it is the same word here tied to good works.
Right.
I want you to be a zealot for good works. So when we're talking about, hey, let's sit around the family table and talk about this podcast.
Yeah.
It's easy to go out and say, okay, I'm going to go do these good works.
I'll take out the garbage.
He wants us to cultivate an attitude where we're excited about it.
Yeah, cultivate an attitude and be eager, right? I mean, when there's an opportunity for some good work, to serve someone, to help someone, to give to someone, you know, that should just be like kind of overflowing in our spirit. And people when they see that, are like, well, you don't have to do that, or no, you shouldn't have. You know, hopefully when we're zealous for it, you know, it's just so powerful and, you know, almost overwhelming, you know, that it really, you know, makes a strong statement about our commitment to God and our love for Him and our love for the person that we're trying to serve or help.
But how do you cultivate that attitude, though? How do you make someone want to do something?
Man, I mean, part of me is like, you just got to get deep into the Word so that the message of the cross becomes real to you. Because the only answer to that for me is you would have had to been there at the cross. Like, I feel like if we were there at the foot of the cross and saw Jesus, it'd be like, wow, that'd be such a powerful thing. But God's expectation for us is that we have the power of that scene written on our hearts as we read it and study it and meditate on it.
It's such an important point, because what you're getting down to is, you know, do you really believe this? Do you see it? Do you understand it? And when it's real to you, when God reveals your purpose, He's kind of like revealing who you are. Like, you're seeing yourself for the first time. Like,
yeah.
It's the quintessential question that man asks, like, why am I here?
Right.
What's my purpose in life?
Right.
And when God reveals it to us, I made you so that your life can be one of good works.
Right.
Which ultimately is going to bring about God's glory. People are going to see that. You know, you're fulfilling God's role on the earth. I mean, a number of things we could talk about. But it should be eye-opening and motivating to us that this is why I'm here.
Yeah, and, you know, we've mentioned it on this podcast, and Ephesians 2:10 is very clear. You know, we are His workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. I mean, that's just the basis upon which God created us. So that's the only way to fulfill our purpose. But I don't know. What are your thoughts on being motivated to be zealous?
Well, I mean, I think that's part of it is you just have to really embrace that this is what you're here for. Like,
right.
Like if I see myself as this is how I'm supposed to be living my life, I want to, whatever I do, I want to do 100%. The second thing is, I think about being zealous for good works. It really helps me to see the end result of it.
Mm-hmm.
If you've never experienced the joy that comes from giving
right.
or doing for other people, man, you're missing out on something that's very special. And, you know, you start to get a glimpse of it. Like, if you give a child a Christmas present, they're like, oh, I can't, you know, yeah. This is great. And just that appreciation that they have, it's sort of like the Good Samaritan. Like, you get some joy out of lifting someone up off the ground who might have otherwise just been dead.
Right.
And you're helping them on their way. There's a self-satisfaction that comes from that, that makes you feel good in a very different way than the joy you might get from stealing something from someone, or you know, you know what I mean? Like, well, like our other ways of excitement.
Yeah. Or even the joy of buying yourself something. Like if you save money and you buy yourself something, that's an exciting time. Like I saved and now I have this nice thing. But the joy of doing something for someone else is 180 degrees in a different direction because it impacts another person, and the joy and gratitude that that person will communicate many times is powerful. And knowing in your heart that you've done what God wanted you to do, I mean, all that gives you some joy, some peace, some fulfillment, some happiness that should be motivational.
I think so. Sure. And I mean, Jesus tapped into that. I mean, we mentioned Philippians 2 earlier, but for the joy set before him.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Endured the cross. So like there was some sacrifice, some giving, some goodness on Jesus's part. But where was the joy in it? The joy wasn't in the act of dying.
Right.
The joy was in the process of the cross. The joy was in what was going to be accomplished.
Yeah, what he would see at the end.
Right, yeah. So kind of the end result. And when you look at good works in that way, like I'm going to make somebody's day, and guess what? My day is going to be made.
Yeah.
Then it starts to be something that you really can look forward to.
Yeah.
You share in their joy. You make their life better. You grow in love toward each other. They appreciate you. You feel like your life's worth living. Like, man, when your life is spent doing good, you do feel good about your life.
Yeah, that's right. And I kind of thought we might come back to it later. We might as well just mention it here. But that idea of the joy set before him, you know, that's what Jesus is talking about that I've already referred to, Matthew 6:19 through 21, about lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth, but lay up treasures in heaven, right? Because moth doesn't corrupt, thieves don't break in and steal. No one's going to take that. And looking at that result and remembering that, and then the flip side of that, I remember like back in Haggai where you started, when people aren't putting God first and zealous for God's work, what does he say is happening there? He's like, you guys are laboring for wages and putting them into a purse with holes.
Like,
nothing is worse than like having a hole in your pocket and you put money in it and it's just gone. And that kind of gives us a picture of if you're not doing good works and all you're doing is wrapped up in yourself, like it's just something that's going to evaporate.
Well, God's not going to reward it.
He's not going to reward it. And whatever reward you have, it's just your earthly reward. It's just going to be gone.
Yeah. And I mean, he says the same thing in Malachi. Like, if you would just test me now.
Oh, yeah.
Bring stuff into my storehouse and I'll open up blessings for you.
Window of heaven.
So there's like, God's intending for us in doing good works to be blessed by it in a number of ways.
Right.
And 2 Corinthians 8 and 9, it's like, God's going to cause your generosity to help yourself. Like you, the seed that you're giving away, God's going to give it back to you so that you're never going to have lack.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's like a boomerang effect as far as the way it comes back at times. And, you know, I've experienced that. I know you've experienced it at times where it's just like you can't outgive God. You know, you can't outwork God. You do a lot of works in his service. And, you know, it's almost like the movie It's a Wonderful Life, where this guy's given and given and given for this building loan to help all these people get a house. And then when he's in need, you know, guess what? He's got hundreds of friends that are in his corner. And when we do that in the family of God, then we have an extended family that's pretty awesome. You know, if we have some need, you know, we don't do it for that purpose, but that's just part of God's plan for us to be a family.
Right. God built that in. He's not saying you do good works and you get your hand slapped. You bless others,
right.
You'll be blessed. And right. That's just a general biblical principle. You think about the motivation aspect of being zealous for good works. It's very easy to learn to be zealous for good works when you see other people zealous for good works.
Yes, right. Because then you're just like, wow, they did this. Like, I should go do this. And it's something different. But you're motivated because you saw someone do it. And it's like, wow, I need to do more. I need to be more. I need to, you know.
I mean, how many stories could I tell you of people in my life that have motivated me through right. their generosity?
Right.
I mean, I remember when I first moved to Atlanta, living with
Smiths.
Robert and Peggy Smith.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And I didn't know them really from anybody, right? I came over and was working over here and had a girlfriend and whatnot. But, I mean, they just welcomed me into their home in a way that is kind of unusual. You know,
right.
People give you a place to stay for a night, but when someone says, you know, why don't you can just stay in my basement for a while, or,
yeah.
You know, let's let's go out to dinner and I'm just going to buy your dinner every time. And if you try to buy my dinner, I'm going to chop your hand off. When you are around people like that, then that's inspiring when you see their zeal for doing good for you to do good. I remember one time we had a bunch of people over for a party. When I say a bunch of people, it was Warbis, weird party. Yeah. You know, a couple hundred people. I mean,
we're not
kind of a small thing. I mean, it was weird. We were young then. And just a lot of weird things happening. Anyway, all the kids come out of state. We have this big blast party. I mean, they all go to church. He takes everybody out to dinner, and he buys every kid dinner.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, hundreds and hundreds of dollars at this buffet. He's like, just come on in.
Right.
And I mean, the joy on his face for doing that, you don't forget stuff like that. When you see real zeal for good works that are just straight godly,
yeah,
it blows everything else out of the water. And you're like, you know what? I'm a loser. I want to do more and be more.
Yeah, he bought dinner for me when we visited there one time 5 years ago or so. But I mean, like, that's when all six of us were together, and I knew whenever all six of my family went out, like, it wasn't $20. No. I didn't barely even know the guy very well. So yeah, I mean, that's a great example. And
how long could I go on?
But just to give everybody the full flavor, like, how long did you stay in his basement?
I don't even know, 6 months maybe?
6 months.
Well, then Anna lived there. When Anna finally moved over before we were married, Anna lived there.
After, like, but not you and her together.
Multiple people lived there, right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think Glenn and Amy Bruns lived there. I mean, I think a bunch of people lived there. Like,
yeah.
Their basement was, like, super hospitable. So guess what that's made me want to do? I want you to stay in my house, and I want to buy your food, right? And when you see what Christian people do and live like—
Right.
Man, it fires you up. You got fired up by that guy, Gary Sandusky.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, he was just someone that was always washing someone's feet, you know, and it could be, you know, I don't know, like cutting down a tree to help someone whose tree fell, or putting a new roof on someone's house, you know, or cooking food for a bunch of people. I mean, a lot of
different
examples.
Guy, and he's cooking food for people.
Well, he would, yeah, but for him, I mean, he wasn't doing something like,
No, I get
but
it.
He would fire up the grill and just start throwing stuff on the grill, and then, like, let's all, but that's great.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you think, especially from a preacher standpoint, like, what are the things a preacher's supposed to do? We go to the hospital when you're sick, and we prepare the lessons, and we do the class, and I shake your hand on the way out. But when you see someone that is committed to, no, I'll come cut your grass or blow your leaves or cook you food or do things like that, like, that's inspiring too, because you see Gary and you think, this guy's living out the principles that he's talking about every day.
Yeah. Did you remember that time when he, like, cooked soup for someone and he took soup over to their house and the guy looked at the soup and he was like, Gary, this looks like hot water. And Gary was like, no, it's diet soup. And it really was. It was like water.
Like, no, I don't.
It's just funny to hear him tell that story. But the point is, he just wanted to show someone that he cared. And he went over and visited this guy. And you know, the guy didn't leave that exchange thinking anything else than, you know, Gary cares about me and Gary loves me. And he's just trying to do what he can do. It's just a funny story.
Well, you think about being zealous for good works. How frequently do you think someone that's zealous for good works is going to be thinking about and doing said works?
Oh, man, yeah. I mean, the whole idea of being zealous is like you're consumed with it. Remember when Jesus cleansed the temple and the disciples remembered the prophecy from the Psalms? It says, zeal for thy house has consumed me. And that idea of, like, how often you're doing it, like, the whole idea of zeal is it just kind of consumes you. Like, you're thinking about it all the time, or you're trying to come up with an idea, or you know, hey, guess what? You know, Anna's email went out about the church and it's so-and-so's birthday, so let's do this. I mean, any number of different things could just, like, come into your mind, and
it's an all-the-time thing.
Yeah.
And you think about, you know, the Sunday service changes. I mean, we're in weird COVID land. The elders have said, all right, we're going to just stick for one service for now. We're going to extend Sunday morning. Somebody that's zealous for good work is going to see the freed up time slot between 5 and 6 and say, guess what? Man, it's an opportunity. We can go do something for somebody, or, you know, it's the Lord's Day. Let's find something good to do with our time.
Yeah.
Somebody that's not zealous for good works, guess what? Oh, man, more time for me.
More time on the couch.
free time for me. And when that is your approach to your life, go back and read Haggai 1 and see where that attitude leads you.
Yeah.
It's not time to build the Lord's house. Well, okay. You go make your house look pristine. You go take care of your life. You make sure you're all buttoned up while the rest of the world's in shambles. God remembers that stuff.
Yeah, it's not going to end well. And think about where we would be if that was the mindset Jesus had, right? I mean, Jesus didn't say, oh, I'm going to stay comfortable on the couch in my recliner. You know, he went to the cross. And I mean, he did that which was absolutely the most difficult thing to do. He didn't take the easy road, and he calls us not to take the easy road. And this is just one way that we can, at times, make a sacrifice.
Yeah, and it needs to be a sacrifice. It needs to be something that you feel like, all right, I don't want to do this, but it's time to get to work. And that's what God wants us to do. And there's a number of things we could spend the last few minutes talking about. The benefit to the kingdom, right? People seeing our activity, right. Causing people to glorify God. But let's spend some time talking about what might be good examples for people to do. Because, you know, I'm heavy application, maybe to a fault. But, like, if we had a few things that really people could do or should do, that may need some help. They need some leadership. Like, all right, I'm convinced. I'm going to be zealous for good works.
Right.
I don't know what to do. What should I do? I mean, you got a couple things we could banter about that might be in the good works chamber.
I was hoping you were going to get us kicked off on that.
Well,
you're the king of application.
But see, since it's my podcast, I kind of ask the questions and you give the thoughtful answers.
Yeah, I know. But this is one of those times where I'm rubber and you're glue.
Yeah, that's, let me get a million here to help you finish that out. So when you think about good works, I mean, one thing that always sticks out to me are the people that Jesus values the most. We've been studying James, and you remember James 1:27, where we have pure and undefiled religion before
in the sight of our God and Father is this. Yep.
To visit the orphans and widows in their affliction, keep oneself unspotted from the world. There's a type of people that we need to be more closely paying attention to.
Yep.
That need help. So when I'm thinking about good works, I'm always thinking about who needs it the most.
Right.
Because again, very easy when you think, well, I'm going to show hospitality. You know, you're going to invite your friends. You're going to invite your people that you like, even though there might not be family, people from church. We got to make sure we expand our good works horizon to include especially those of the household of faith and especially those who really need it. Widows, people that don't have much, people that are struggling.
Right.
Those need to be on the tips of your tongue. And I know it's hard. I mean, Mountain View is great about this. But, I mean, Dion has ruined so many good ideas because he's already there and doing it.
Because he's already got it done.
So this lesson is really not going to help you unless you can do more than Dion. You got to be there
a little bit faster. I mean,
we got to get there earlier.
Yeah.
You got to almost GPS track him.
Get there earlier, stay later.
And know where he's at. He's always taking care of Miss June's yard. He's always out helping people.
We need to put like an angle tracker on him.
I mean,
you know what I mean?
I know, because you can't, it's already done. Like, he's already done it. And so you're going to have to get up early in the morning on some of the Mountain View people to just make sure some things are done.
He played soccer the other day, and I was wondering how he's in such good shape because he's always doing so many good works.
Cutting
he was crushing on the soccer field. I was surprised to see him there.
Well, he was there because he probably felt like it was a good work to help you out and get better at soccer.
It was. I mean, he helped our team to victory.
He's one of a kind. Well, and you think about, those people just need to be forefront of our mind. You cut everybody's grass, but the one person whose grass really needs it are the people that can't do it as well.
Yeah, that's right.
And so just, if you're thinking about good works, think about, here's the 10 people that I might could do something for. What do they need?
Right.
And those people are the people that are widows and orphans. All right, bouncing back to you,
I just want to kind of, before we leave that point, I mean, widows and orphans, but we talked about this in Luke chapter 14 a month or two ago, but Jesus is like, when you give a banquet or a party or, you know, host some people, invite not just the widows and the orphans, but anyone who would be kind of, you know, not have the money to repay you, not have the means to return the favor. You know, so that's just going along with what you're saying.
Yeah. So outside of Christians that have real needs, we also need to be conscious of people that are complete strangers to us.
Yeah.
That would be the second thing I would say. I mean, you do good to Christians, especially so. God loves them. You love them. But people that we don't have anything to do with, that's kind of where we move into the territory more of Jesus. I mean, that's a Good Samaritan story.
Yep.
He has no association with this person, but he's here doing good. I mean, Anna lately has seen a lot of homeless people around, or people that say they're homeless or are in need, and her heart's been touched by some of that.
Right.
And today she took some family to Walmart and bought them a bunch of clothes and things.
Right.
Just went shopping with them. I know you've done stuff like that in the past. I mean, I appreciate that her heart is there,
right?
Because she just wanted to go do good,
right?
And left me with the boys, which ought to be considered a good work. I mean, it might not be the same level, but it's up there. Because
it's up there. I mean, they're right in the middle of the terrible twos.
It was rough.
There could be a mental breakdown.
That
at
really
any
should
point.
That should be the good work, is taking care of your twin boys.
Yeah. Well, but let me just say, like Hebrews 13, do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for in so doing some have entertained angels unawares. Hebrew writers referring, you know, most likely to Abraham in the Old Testament, the book of Genesis. But that's really what the word hospitality means. It's a lover of strangers. I think there's a sense in which that's still applicable to our church family, because we would all be strangers. Nothing brought us together except Christ and the church. But certainly, as you're saying, there's a broader application, because we want everyone to come into that kingdom, and they're strangers and they're outside of it. And for us to just be the type of person that loves any and all with whom we come into contact, that's how God was. He so loved the world that he gave us his son. And, you know, there are opportunities, and we just got to kind of balance all that with what Galatians 6:10, as we therefore have opportunity, let's do good to all men, and especially those of the household of faith. So, you know, that's just kind of tying together both the points you're making and hopefully elevating the need to help people we don't have any idea who they are.
Yeah. And sometimes you don't even have to see a need to just do something good. It's a unique thing in America where you just look around and all your neighbors live in the same type house, and people drive similar cars, and you shop at the same places. Like, you don't look around and think, oh, here's somebody completely destitute. You know, we all look the same. But as I've told some people in the past who are like, hey, do you know of anybody that has anything that they need? Look at a young married family, mm-hmm, who you know are just getting started. You know, look at somebody that is going through a tough time, and just send them something. They may never have said a word about what I need.
Right.
But man, $100 bill for somebody that is just getting started,
yeah,
they're going to feel like, man, I'm going to remember that for a long time.
Yeah, that's right. It's impactful. And definitely those of us who are, you know, slogging through middle age right now, we know what it was like to be young and broke, young, dumb, and broke. And now we're like middle-aged, dumb, and got some money. You know, we pass that along and certainly be an encouragement. But I think that's a great example. I mean, people that are just having their first child, like, you don't even know how much money you're going to hemorrhage getting that child to be an adult. And even young married couples without children. And we live in a world. I was talking to one of the brothers at church the other day, and, you know, student debt. I mean, a lot of people have student debt, and that's a big chunk of money. So, you know, people aren't like Scrooge McDuck swimming in their sea of money. You know, and just, there's a lot of opportunities to help and encourage people.
Yeah. Just give them some money. Last thing I'll say, you know, Jesus, you mentioned earlier, John 13, about washing people's feet. He left us an example so that we should follow in his steps. I mean, washing people's feet, I did it to you, you do it to them. Sometimes we need to just think about something that's extremely dirty and uncomfortable and go help somebody with it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's the passage in Romans that talks about, you know, whatever gift you have received, use it in serving God. And it says, you know, those who have been giving the gift of service. And the idea of that message is it's just practical service. It's whatever someone needs at a specific point in time. And those are things we can't necessarily give you a list of things. But to me, all of that falls into this idea of washing someone's feet. Like, you may never literally wash anyone's feet, but you might do 100 things that you're just doing at the moment. I mean, someone's got a handful of groceries. You can't even take a bag of their groceries, but you can open the door for them. I mean, just at the moment someone needs something, a lot of times you can see that and you can fulfill that need. And that's kind of what I want to say is a kind of universal application of this idea of washing someone's feet. It's just whatever they need.
Yep. And you mentioned too, whatever your ability is and you're good at. I mean, we have unfortunate people at church that are mechanics and they get the brunt of some of that, but yeah. You know, there are other people that have similar skills and you just get abused with church. Look, do that to the glory of God.
Yes. Yeah,
I mean, you're getting your hands dirty. You're out there helping somebody on Saturday morning.
Yeah.
Like none of that stuff is something that you want necessarily to be doing.
Yeah.
But man, just giving a cup of cold water to somebody, if that's your thing.
Yeah.
Or a cup of hot water in Gary's case, like it's
the diet soup.
You're doing something to the glory of God. And so don't sell your little thing short if it's something you're good at.
Yeah, I'm going to start keeping a list of what I mean by practical service because I think of these sometimes when I see some, I was like, wow, that's exactly what Romans 12 is saying. And I can't think of any specific examples right now, but there's some that are pretty funny. I mean, people just have some needs. Like at that moment, like you just do whatever it is because who knows what someone's going to need at a specific point in time with all the randomness, you know, that life will throw at you at different times.
Well, and look, the ladies at church, cooking meals, always appreciated.
Right.
You know, if you just called up somebody, they don't have to have just died or lost an appendage or something. Just call them up and say, guess what? You're on my meal list. Thursday, here, I'm bringing something.
Right.
Guys, y'all are always great about Mountain View Moving Company, Mountain View Roofing Company, Mountain View Landscaping Company. Like, we're hacks at everything, but we're out there getting it done.
Right.
Like, just make sure your life is more full of those things than not full.
Right.
We shouldn't have to sit around and be like, remember when we did that last spring? That was so good.
Remember 5 years ago when we got our boots on?
We need to be doing stuff all the time.
Right.
And we sit on the couch, we ought to have a little something in the back of our mind that says, I need to be out.
I need to be doing something.
I need to be doing something worthwhile with my life, people zealous for good works.
Right.
So I hope the podcast kind of stirred you up a little bit. It's going to step on your toes a bit. It steps on my toes. And if you're doing good, you need to keep doing it.
Yeah,
keep doing it. We're not giving up. Right. We're not done. And we're going to keep climbing and growing and getting stronger because Jesus is worthy. And I want my life to be a life worthy of a sacrifice.
Yeah, that's right. I think maybe this week or you know, sometime in the next 7 days, you know, make a concerted effort to do something that you weren't planning on doing for someone.
Yeah. Something that...
Maybe multiple things. I mean, if you're going to be zealous for it, I mean, we could give you a stretch goal, like something every day.
Well, if you can't do it at Christmas, I mean, when can you do it? Come on now.
That's right.
These are easy days.
Slow pitches over the plate.
To get out and do it. You keep saying that, but have you seen our softball team? Those aren't gimmies, and we need to stop using that analogy.
Well, I think it's a fine analogy. I think maybe your softball skills are slightly lacking.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, okay. Well, that's a different problem.
Well, you need to get out there and help us do your good work if that's your thing.
No, my thing is cheering on Perry Betterton and David Ditter.
Well,
they know what to do with a slow pitch over the plate. I guarantee you that.
They do. Well, for the rest of us, we need a little work. Todd, I appreciate your thoughts tonight, and appreciate our church. Stay safe. COVID's still ravaging. Who knows what's the future for our country, but I know this, Jesus is Lord.
That's right.
And
that's right.
We're going to be fine. Onward and upward always. Todd, thank you. And we look forward to seeing everybody soon.
Yeah. Be up.